Fresh Air's linguist Jeff Nunberg chairs the usage panel for the American Heritage Dictionary. You'd think he'd be able to keep track of all those obscure usage distinctions, like the difference between masterful and masterly. But even he says it's a hopeless cause.
Some time ago, I had dinner with the distinguished British lexicographer Edward Winer. At the time, he was editor of the Oxford English Dictionary, but before that, he'd also edited a usage book for Oxford. As it happened, I had just finished writing the usage material for a new edition of the American Heritage Dictionary, so we fell to comparing notes, as it were. He asked me why I'd taken it on, and I told him I'd done it in the hope I'd finally mastered the difference between in behalf of and on behalf of. Didn't work, did it? He said. I confessed that it hadn't. I still can't remember which is which. Me neither, he said, and then he leaned over to me in a conspiratorial way. You know, if neither of us can keep this one straight, why don't we just quietly agree to bag it? Actually, we might have gotten away with it. At least, we're not the only ones who aren't clear on this rule. The grammar books tell you that you should use on behalf of when one person is acting as agent for another, as in, she made the offer on behalf of her client. Whereas in behalf of is supposed to mean for the benefit of, as in, we raised money in behalf of the earthquake victims. But the two senses aren't that far apart, and people have been getting them mixed up since the late 18th century. In fact, when Winer's predecessor James Murray was compiling the first edition of the Oxford English Dictionary back in the 1880s, one of the people he cited for misusing on behalf of was Archbishop Richard Chevenix Trench, the great 19th century scholar who was the spiritual father of the OED. In retrospect, it would have saved everybody a lot of trouble if Murray had just said, hey, if Archbishop Trench can't keep this one straight, why don't we just bag it? There are a lot of pairs like this. Take the distinction between masterful and masterly. According to H.W. Fowler's classic Modern English Usage, one of them is supposed to mean imperious or domineering, and the other supposed to mean with the skill of a master. I'd be happy to remind you which is which, but I'm damned if I'm going to look the words up again. Over the years, I figure they've already cost me a morning out of my life. Then there's the distinction between each other and one another. I was curious enough about that one to suggest a couple of years ago that we take it up with the usage panel of the American Heritage Dictionary, a group of about 150 eminent writers and scholars that we poll every so often for their views on usage. About 50% of them said they used each other for two and one another for more than two. That's the rule you'll find in the traditional grammar books. You're supposed to say, the Smothers brothers like each other, but the Marx brothers hate one another. But another 30% of the panelists had it the opposite way, and the rest of them just threw up their hands, which, to tell you the truth, is what I would have done. Actually, that answer puts us in good company. It turns out that neither Samuel Johnson nor Noah Webster used each other and one another the right way either. And if Johnson and Webster couldn't keep this one straight, why don't we just bag it? I mean, it's not like the difference between disinterested and uninterested, where you could have the sense that there's a risk of losing an important conceptual distinction. Even if I'm fuzzy on each other and one another, I'm still rock solid on the difference between two and three. Still, those of us who write dictionaries and grammar books will have to keep dutifully setting down the rules. We know they have more to do with folklore than fact. Most of them were just spun by grammarians out of whole cloth. And we're aware that nobody but purists is going to take them seriously. But people want to believe that where there's a difference, there must be a distinction, even if we're making it up as we go along. Besides, there's a sense of satisfaction you can take in feeling that you're using words more precisely than other people are, even if most of the time it's purely delusional. I'm a stickler on the difference between partly and partially, even though I know that writers from Jane Austen to James Joyce have paid no attention to it. It's the obeisance I do to Mr. Painter, who explained it all one day in ninth grade English when I was evidently in the mood to listen. And I've always taken a quiet pride in knowing the difference between flotsam and jetsam. The first is the wreckage that's floating on the water. The second is the stuff that's thrown overboard and washed ashore. That's a useful item to have on hand whenever the conversation flags.
Jeff Nunberg is a linguist at Stanford University and the Xerox Palo Alto Research Center.